From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to see you. Yeah, it's a great day. We got a great show for you today. We're very excited to be joined later in the show by the Secretary of Energy, Mr. Stephen Chu. He'll be here. In his honor, all of our jokes will be solar-powered on this week's show, which means that this week we will be able to blame the cloud cover. First, though, it's your turn to give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Jake, and I'm from Fremont, Nebraska.
Fremont, Nebraska? What's there in Fremont, Nebraska?
Lots.
Yeah.
Lots and lots.
So much you had to pause to think of.
What's there? Yes.
Yes. Well, welcome to the show, Jake. Let me introduce you to this week's panel. First, say hello to a television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mo. Hi, Jake.
Next, you know her from Saturday Night Live and her monologues, God Said Ha and Letting Go of God, Ms. Julia Sweeney.
Hello.
Hello.
And lastly, a bon vivant and a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hi, Jake.
Hello, Adam.
So, Jake, you're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle right here is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
I am ready.
All right. Here is your first quote.
At times, the president's appearance took on the air of a pep rally. But at other points, it seemed as though the senators had been summoned to the principal's office.
That was the New York Times description of an event on Wednesday. Who got a stern talking to this week?
The House Democrats.
Close enough. It was actually Democratic senators. But yes, it was Democrats. The cable news networks all went live to the Newseum building in Washington on Wednesday with the caption reading, Senate Democrats Retreat. And America said, this is news. But no, a week after he spoke to House Republicans, the president visited with the Senate Democrats in order to buck them up a bit, tell them not to be so frightened. But he spoke a little sharply, and many of them dove under their chairs. The event was not nearly, in my opinion, as exciting as last week's debate with the Republicans. In addition to being less adversarial, this one had the disadvantage of involving Democrats. Even the coolest thing in the world becomes boring if you add Democrats. If you put Democrats in the movie Avatar instead of a planet full of giant blue people living in an enormous tree, you'd see 3-foot-tall little beige creatures hiding behind a shrub.
Who nonetheless have a sort of a weird attachment to their own tails.
It's true, yes. Did you guys watch this?
Yeah, I watched some of it, but you're right. The House Republican Caucus and Obama's debating there was so much more entertaining.
I swear to you, the GOP one, I watched 3 times.
Oh, it was like divorce court. It was great.
It was great. I think they should show it every Friday night at midnight, and people should come up dressed as their favorite character.
Yeah.
I want to be Mike Pence because I want that hair, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to think, I met a poor boy in Baltimore who was so excited to meet you. Would you give that guy a capital gains tax cut, that poor boy, please?
Whenever he says poor boy, you have to throw a sandwich at
him. Yeah, I know exactly.
Really fun.
All right, very good, Jake. Here is your next quote.
Alcohol use, adultery, fraternization, and body art.
In addition to sounding like a really good time, that was Senator Saxby Chambliss. He was musing on what will become rampant, in his opinion, in the military if they allow whom to serve openly.
Homosexuals.
Yes, gays, lesbians.
Gays.
This week marked the first hearing about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy since the military decided 17 years ago that gays could serve if they just would lie about being gay. So for years it's been soldier, do you enjoy ultimate fighting? Well, yes, sir, but not in that way, sir. You know.
I love the body art.
Here's the thing. So the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs say they're now for allowing gays in the military, but some conservatives, like Senator Chambliss, are not so sure. You heard him say he was worried that if you allow the gays in, the next thing you know, sailors will be getting tattoos. Perhaps of anchors or the word mom. I have to say the reaction to this has been weird. Duncan Hunter, he's a Republican congressman and a military veteran, he went on All Things Considered and he said, well, if you let the gays in, then you have to let in, quote, transgenders and hermaphrodites, unquote. He said that. He was worried about the hermaphrodites. He doesn't understand that hermaphrodites would be a tactical asset. They can pursue enemies into both men's and women's restrooms.
That's true, yeah.
Taliban will have no place to hide.
I don't think that we have any laws on the books preventing hermaphrodites from serving in our military, do we?
Well, he's afraid that they'll figure that out.
Yeah, they fall under the don't ask, can't tell policy.
That's right.
All right, Jake. Your last quote is a movie review from Vice President Joe Biden.
I think that one of the odds-on favorite is this new program that I looked at it. I wish I was seeing it in 3D. And you sit there and you watch this science fiction thing unfold in front of you.
That was the Vice President predicting good things for the movie Avatar, one of many movies nominated for what this week?
The Oscars.
Of course. Mr. Biden was on MSNBC this week talking up the science fiction epic, which takes almost as long to watch as it takes to hear Biden describe it. It's the favorite to win Best Picture, even though there are, for the first time in decades, 9 other Best Picture nominees. They upped the number to 10 to increase interest in the broadcast. But they ran out of serious contenders around number 8, which is why the last 2 slots went to the David After the Dentist YouTube video. And the 10th Best Picture nominee is a 5-second clip of some guy getting hit in the crotch with a baseball. By the way, this Oscars, with the nominations we had this week, this is the first time that I believe in history that a man and his ex-wife are both competing for the same Oscar. James Cameron and Kathryn Bigelow are both nominated for Best Director. Presumably, whoever wins the statuette will spend weekends and some holidays at the other person's house. Grow up conflicted and not be able to have a good relationship of its own. It'll be very sad. It'll date Tony for a while, but it won't work out because he just can't commit. He's afraid it'll happen.
Who are you? You didn't direct me.
See, I loved Avatar. When I thought it was 2/3 over, I thought it was one of the best movies I saw all year. And then I realized, no, it was only a quarter of the way through.
Really?
Then I
skewed your sense of time.
Yes.
It was so involving. Carl, how did Jake do in our quiz?
Jake was a winner, Peter. He had 3 correct answers.
Well done, Jake. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for playing. Give our best to Nebraska. Thanks for calling.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Mo, evangelical Christian churches, they've been having a hard time reaching that core male 18 to 36-year-old demographic, just like everybody else. So to entice those guys to Sunday worship, some churches have begun offering young men what?
Robots that fight. I'm trying to think of what the demographic. Girls that mud wrestle over beer.
You're circling around it, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's something they like.
Beer drinking, mud wrestling, girl robots.
Somewhere right now, a depressed pastor just went, aha!
That's it. That really is it. Okay, they're offering them. It's something related to that.
It's something related to that, to fighting, in fact.
Oh, it's a fight club.
Yeah, basically it's mixed martial arts.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Yeah, like Ultimate Fighting. That's what the church is
offering.
Ultimate
Fighting, yeah.
Ultimate Fighting, yeah.
The Ultimate Fighting. Yeah.
That's right. You can, guys.
That's in Revelations.
Guys, and I'm sure we have a lot of those listeners to our show. Guys, you can proclaim your devotion to the Prince of Peace by beating the living crap out of each other.
Sure.
You can turn your other cheek and then come back with a powerful roundhouse to his. As one pastor puts it to the New York Times, quote, compassion and love, we agree with all that stuff, but what led me to find Christ was that Jesus was a fighter, unquote. Now, if you're not familiar with mixed martial arts, this is the combat sport that takes place in an octagonal ring. and involves a mix of taekwondo, kickboxing, wrestling, and a profound misunderstanding of the teachings of Jesus.
I don't know. This is,
well, you know, mixed arts.
I don't know. It sounds very Revelations to me.
Yeah, very apocalyptic.
Is precedent. There, you know, like bare knuckles against slingshots and stuff. You know, it's biblical precedent.
But like a lot of things, the Jews tried this first. They tried something similar at synagogues, but it all came to a tragic end the day the mysterious fighter known as the Moil finally pulled off his signature finishing move. And
blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit these guns! Tonight, the lion will lay down with the lamb, but only one will leave. The smackdown on the mount.
I love that.
Down. Good morning, Sister Mary. Good morning, Brother John. Well, I want to stop and talk with you and tell you how I come along.
Thank you so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Leslie from Naples, Florida.
Hey, how are things in Naples?
They're nice. Pretty mild right now. Not too hot.
Yeah, of course. And what do you do there?
I'm in the profession formerly known as reporting.
I see. And so then what do you do for a living?
Well, I'm now what everyone calls a multimedia journalist. So I don't just write. I take photos. I do video, a little of everything.
Well, welcome to the show, Leslie. You're going to play the game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Leslie's topic?
But I thought of it first.
The secret to making it in today's world is to come up with a fresh idea, no matter how ridiculous it seems. This week, we read about people fighting over an idea we're surprised anyone would claim. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of intellectual theft. Your job, choose the real story. Do that, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. You ready to play?
Yeah.
First off, let's hear from Mo Rocca.
She doesn't dote, she doesn't tell stories, and she never hugs. She's America's worst grandmother, the newest reality show from NBC to premiere this March. Each week, six of the greedy granny's grandkids try to soften her stale muffin of a heart. If one of them can get her to give him or her a cookie, that kid wins. She sounds almost as awful as Fox's Nastiest Nana, a competing Bad Grandma reality series announced only 2 days later. The Peacock is crying foul and copyright infringement, but Fox's Mike Darnell is having none of it. Quote, the shows are unrelated. That's because the Nastiest Nana makes NBC's grandma look like Mother Teresa. The Nastiest Nana has a cookie jar, yes, filled with black jelly beans. She needlepoints insults to her grandkids like, happy birthday, fatso. She even smells mean. Ours is definitely the bitchiest bubby, the evilest abuela, the most malevolent Mau Mau, says Darnell. A court will decide if Fox is the one being nasty.
The fight between reality shows, each with bad grandmas. Your next story of people fighting over a bad idea comes from Julia Sweeney.
To paraphrase the Beatles, look at all the homely people. Where do they all come from? And where can I find the one that's right for me? 3 years ago, Joe Carson founded eSettle.com, a dating website for average to homely-looking people. The service's slogan is, on a level playing field, you can score more often. And it offers users the advantage of knowing that nobody they meet is going to be in a position to look down on them. He says, quote, we usually get people after they've been on eHarmony or Match.com for a year or so, and they got run over by reality. This week, Carson sued Lisa Mount, founder of GreatPersonality.com, which calls itself, quote, the dating site for people with more to offer than just good looks. Carson from eSettle says that Mount of Great Personality stole his idea, business methods, and is trolling for his unique customer base with a pop-up ad campaign that says, don't eSettle, e-change your priorities. The case will be heard by a court in San Francisco in May.
Two websites, each looking for the same not-so-very attractive customer base. Your last story of an intellectual property dispute comes from Adam Felber.
What's not to like about Heartstopper Sports Grill, a heart attack-themed joint in Delray Beach, Florida that features defibrillators on the wall, pill bottle salt and pepper shakers, and fun coronary-themed menu items like the 3-pound Heartstopper burger and the chili chest pain fries. What's not to love? Well, plenty if you're John Basso, owner of Chandler, Arizona's Heart Attack Grill. And he has filed a lawsuit to arrest operations of the Florida establishment. Quote, Heart Attack Grill is the originator of the medically themed hamburger grill and restaurant, says Basso, whose restaurant features single and double bypass burgers and, like Heartstoppers, offers free food for customers over 350 pounds. But don't put the toe tag on Heartstoppers yet. Their attorney, Eric Lee, claims that his client's restaurant is more of a family-friendly sports bar cardiac arrest experience. For instance, their fishnet-clad waitresses in nurse outfits are not, quote, required to dress in a provocative manner. Not like that other place. And this has, quote, changed the clientele from the Hooters-type crowd to a family-type restaurant. This fig leaf appears to be the only vegetable matter involved with either restaurant in the dispute, which figures to be clogging the courts for the foreseeable future.
All right, then. One of these two battles is going on in the courtrooms of America. Is it from Moraka, America's Worst Grandmother versus The Nastiest Nana, two reality TV shows? From Julia Sweeney, eSettle versus GreatPersonality.com, two dating websites for ugly people. Or from Adam Felber, Heartstoppers versus the Heart Attack Grill, to cardiac arrest-themed restaurants. Which of these is the true story of an intellectual property fight in the news?
You know what? I can't help but go for the Heart Attack Grill, Heartstoppers one.
Really? That's the one you think?
Yeah.
Okay. You're gonna choose that one, Adam's story of the two heart attack-themed restaurants fighting it out. Well, we actually spoke to somebody deeply involved in the actual dispute.
The lawsuit was filed at the end of January by Heart Attack Grill, attempting to seek an injunction to enjoin my client from utilizing its medically related theme.
That was Eric Lee, lawyer for the Heartstoppers Sports Grill in Delray Beach, Florida. Congratulations. You picked the real story. Well done. You've earned a point for Adam Felber, and
Thank you.
Have, in fact, won our prize, Carl's Voice in Your Home, voicemail, answering machine, whatever else you got. Congratulations. Well done.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And now the game where we invite notable people on to answer questions about something they didn't bother to note. It's called Not My Job. We are honored this week to welcome to our show the Secretary of Energy of the United States of America, Dr. Stephen Chu. Dr. Chu, welcome to the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Now, what's interesting about you, that many people have noticed, is that usually cabinet secretaries are politicians, even that, but you are not or have not been a politician. You are, in fact, a working scientist with a Nobel Prize on your wall, which is pretty impressive. And the question we have for you is, how hard was it to go from the world of science, which is based on rationality and truth, to the world of politics, which is not?
Well, I grew up in a culture where being a professor at a great research university, and I started at Stanford, right, was as high as you can ever get. And so being a department head, a dean, a president interviewer, you know, running a national laboratory, it was all downhill. And so this is just continuing on that.
Really? This is the twilight of your career.
So, yeah. So if you're going downhill, it's all right.
I know. Well, I know you've been, I mean, you are a Nobel Prize winning scientist in your own right, and I know you've run a lot of large institutions, but at the same time, the scientists I know are very straightforward and very intolerant of incorrect opinion, shall we say. Have you ever had to restrain yourself, like when testifying before Congress and some senator or congressman says something that's absolute nonsense and you're not allowed to say, that's ridiculous, Senator?
Well, no, I think the best way is to approach this as, here's an opportunity to do my best to convince people there's another point of view that is rationally based. And to
All right. There's the rational and there's the irrational.
No. I think the response in Congress has been overall very healthy, and it's nice. I don't think they treat me like the average person who's in a cabinet.
That's an interesting question. Does your background in science, does your Nobel Prize give you any sort of credence with these guys and ladies that just your average politician doesn't have?
You'd have to ask them. I don't really know, but...
Do you wear it when you go to the Hill?
No, I think what happens is that they'll at least give you the first minute where they'll listen, and then from there on in, it depends on what you say and how you can reason with people. And so,
Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about the policies you're doing. One of the things you're very concerned with is global warming. I know that you're trying to stop it, which would be good, but there's a lot of people who don't believe that it's happening. How do you talk to those people? And I know you have to, because some of them are in our government.
I think the way you talk with them is you show them data. It's a novel thing, but actually showing data first before you talk about opinions is a good way to do this.
But what if they can't read?
Yeah.
No, these are pictures.
Really? You see, Senator, the big yellow ball is the sun.
And that's a star.
Oh, you can make them pictures say anything you want them to say.
Now, I want to talk about your background, which is quite extraordinary. I know you've discussed it yourself, including in your Nobel Prize speech, which is, for a long time, even maybe beyond getting the Nobel Prize, you were arguably the least accomplished person in your family. Is this true?
That is true. I have two brothers.
Yes.
The oldest one went to a high school. He set the highest cumulative average ever in the history of that high school. The teachers would say, "Oh, Stephen, we expect the same from you." And, you can't compete with that. He goes on, gets a PhD in physics, develops an interest in medicine and biology, so he gets an MD, PhD. And now he's a professor at Stanford, a practicing oncologist, but he was also a professor of biochemistry.
Right.
The younger one.
So he got lucky.
Right. So the younger one was seeing lots of family pressure, as I was. And when I started to do well in college, even more pressure was put on Morgan, the younger one.
Oh my God, what happened?
And so he dropped out of high school.
Did he really?
At the end of his junior year, he said, "I'm not putting up with this." But he somehow talked his way into UCLA without the blessing of the parents or the high school, got a PhD at 21, got a law degree, got a whole bunch of degrees, and so he did okay also.
Really?
So here it is. One brother has two PhDs and an MD, another one has a law degree, a PhD, and I just had one advanced degree. It was pretty awful. And now there's a competition between Morgan and I to race to the bottom. Who is the biggest disappointment to our parents?
Oh, come on. Really? Are you a disappointment? You got to be Secretary of Energy, and your mother was like, "What, you couldn't get state?" Well, fine.
Is this why you're appearing on our show? Race to the bottom.
Like,
I did wait. Yeah. Take that.
When you got your Nobel, were your parents like, "Okay, that's nice. That's good. That's not bad."
Well, so I thought that it would at least level the playing field. So I called my mother that morning and say, "Guess what, Mom? I got a Nobel Prize." And she says, "That's nice, but when are you going to see me next?" And then she calls me up a couple of hours later and says, "Stephen, it's true. I thought you were kidding."
Morgan's more popular. He won a People's Choice Award.
Yeah. Secretary Chu, we are so delighted to have you with us, but we have also asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the losingest bunch of losers in the history of losing.
Since, Dr. Chu, you're a bit of an overachiever, we thought we'd ask you about one of the biggest losers in all of sports. That would be the Washington Generals, the team the Harlem Globetrotters beat in nearly every one of their hundreds of exhibition games played per year. We're going to ask you three questions about the generals. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Secretary Chu playing for?
Peter, the secretary is playing for Susan Golden Meadow of Chicago, Illinois.
All right. Okay.
And just remember, Morgan Chu got all three right.
All right. Here's your first question. The generals are owned by an 88-year-old World War II veteran named Red Klotz. That's his name. And he has what particular claim to fame? A, he invented the spinning the ball in your finger trick. B, he was the first owner to dress his team in below-the-knee shorts, quote, for decency's sake. Or C, he, at the age of 50, himself hit the buzzer-beating shot to lead the generals to victory over the Globetrotters.
That's a toughie. I didn't think the generals actually spun balls. I thought it was always the Globetrotters that spun the ball.
Maybe they saw him doing it and stole the trick. But that is a good point.
But I'm going to go with that because that's so unlikely.
You're going to go with he invented the spinning the ball trick. The first person to say, oh, if I were to take this spherical object and spin it on a point, such as my index finger, it might remain there. I'm just asking you to clarify and confirm that's your
final choice. Answer.
Final answer. You're going to go for A. Actually, it was, in fact, C. He played with the team until he was 62, and at the age of 50, he hit the winning shot in one of the two victories the Generals has ever had over the Globetrotters. And boy, did he get in trouble. But he says they play to win every game, he says. Point of pride. All right, two more chances here, Secretaries. You can do well. When you lose as often as the Generals do, you lose in some very interesting places, including which of these? A leper colony in the Philippines. B, in Jack Nicholson's backyard, or C, on a Rose Parade float?
Okay. I'll collapse.
I'm sorry, so what are you going to pick?
Rose Bowl.
You can pick the Rose Parade, the 10 guys in the moving float.
Yeah, Rose Parade.
Did he say that he was going to collapse? I mean, this is the man in charge of our nuclear arsenal.
I know.
Nukes can only protect you so much.
That's true. So you're going to choose the Rose Parade float, that they played a game while moving through the streets of Pasadena. It was the leper colony. They lost. They played all over the world. They played in a leper colony. They played in the demilitarized zone in Korea. They've played in Lenin Square and lost in all those places.
They lost to players when their arms were falling off?
They didn't play the lepers, Mo.
Oh. Well, they played the Globetrotters.
Really played in a leper colony?
They played the Globetrotters in a leper colony.
I'm sorry. Oh, forgive me.
You have one more chance here. Let's go for this.
I'm not doing so well. I'm glad I had no expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question.
Okay.
What was that Nobel in? Okay. After playing each other for 50 years, the Globetrotters and the Generals decided they needed to spice things up a bit. So on February 9th, the teams will play each other A, on trampolines, B, blindfolded, or C, on ice.
Blindfolded, on trampolines, or on ice.
Why not all three?
On ice.
On ice is your choice?
Mm-hmm.
You're right. They're going to play on ice. In an ice skating rink. You did. In Central Park, New York, Red Klotz says he likes his team's chances. He says, quote, we excel on ice. So.
Wow. They should have thought of that before they took up basketball.
I know. So, Carl, how did the Secretary of Energy, Stephen Chu, do in our show?
Well, he needed at least two to win for Susan Golden Meadow, but the Secretary had just one correct answer.
Oh, hey, that's one more than any of your brothers.
Sorry, Susan.
Stephen Chu is a Nobel Prize winning physicist and is the United States Secretary of Energy. Secretary Chu, thank you so much for joining us today. What a pleasure to have you. And thank you for your good
service. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Take care. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl changes his mobile phone carrier to Verizon. It's our listener limerick challenge. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, every day in the UK, in shops, homes, and boardrooms, people physically hurt each other doing something that isn't even illegal yet. A member of parliament is taking action to protect his citizens through the force of law. What does he want classified as an assault? Happens every day.
Aggressive cheeriness.
No.
Overly aggressive cheeriness.
No.
Really overly aggressive cheeriness.
No.
Annoyingly. So it's something that you can do in offices.
Something people do it all day, everywhere. And he thinks it's dangerous and needs to be classified as an assault. Usually they do it upon meeting each other.
Handshaking.
Exactly right. Handshakes. Strong handshakes in particular.
Oh, wow.
Parliament member Paul Flynn doesn't like handshakes. He says, quote, "They are unnecessary, unhygienic, germ-spreading intrusions. Some oafs use them to prove the strength of their personalities with bone crushers. They should be summoned for assault," unquote.
Oh, that, you were quoting Girly Hands Flynn.
I was. Flynn says he's tried everything to deter firm handshakes, up to and including, quote, "yelps of pain." This makes his tormentors want to do it again, apparently.
I agree
with
that. Yes, yeah. The handshake. I like the bow. What about in Japan? Bow?
I like spooning.
If everybody did gently that, spooning someone
at work,
as you meet. Yeah.
I think it's nice. Yeah.
That's just amazing to consider. Julia, this week, Jenny Sanford, wife of South Carolina governor, or soon to be ex-wife of South Carolina governor, and outdoor enthusiast,
yes.
Mark Sanford.
Yes.
She released her memoir. She writes candidly about her marriage, including a story about the wedding where her husband-to-be insisted on removing what word from their vows?
The word faithful.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Now, if that isn't a sign that this guy's not going to turn out good, that, I don't know what
I know.
Is.
That's real foresight.
Planning
ahead.
Oh, he just didn't want that one word. That's all right.
He wanted to save time to get to the cake.
Exactly, because he loves me so much.
In a world with both John Edwards and Tiger Woods in it, you'd think the race for world's worst husband would be over, but Mark Sanford is in it to win.
Wow, those Carolinas.
Yeah.
According to his ex, like I said, soon-to-be ex-wife, Sanford, a lawyer to the last, removed the promise to be faithful from their wedding vows, but he did insert a clause promising to always enjoy hiking. And she was disappointed, but she agreed to his terms back then. In fact, a careful reading of the wedding ceremony reveals that Sanford really did a fine job with the vows. They read, "I, Mark, take you, Jenny, to have and to hold from this day forward for better or for pretty good, for rich or at least upper middle class, till death do we part or I meet a hot chick from Buenos Aires, whichever comes first."
John Edwards and Mark Sanford belong together.
They really do.
In a sitcom.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But they'd be a terrible couple. Oh, no, the hair. Don't must the hair. Leave it alone.
You're saying they're both Felix in this scenario?
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Adam, Electronic Arts has come up with a new video game so perfect we're surprised no one has thought of it before. They're basing this new game on what?
Joe Biden.
We're not kidding. We think this is a great idea. We're like, this is great.
So it's something that a video game has never been based on before.
As far as we know.
It's based on video games.
No.
You control a kid on a couch playing a video game.
And it's got
very meta, but it's very entertaining.
It's got two sequels that are already ready to go. You got Purgatorio and Paradiso.
Inferno?
Yeah, Dante's Inferno. A video game based on Dante's Inferno. Think about it.
Uh-huh.
Dante Alighieri's epic poem was the blueprint for the original video game. You get 9 circles of hell. That's just a fancy way of saying 9 levels. Mm. And at the end, what do you find but the ultimate boss character to fight, right? Epic poetry has never kicked butt so hard as players fight their way through the circles of lust, anger, and violence. The idea is so successful that Electronic Arts is planning a whole line of games based on classic world literature. There's Don Quixote Kong, A 100 Years of Solitaire, and Ernest Hemingway's classic Pac-Man and the Sea.
Aren't they reissuing Dante's Inferno? Like, they're reissuing the book, too, saying, the book that inspired the fantastic video game.
I'm sure, and they'll replace the art. You know.
Yes.
And people read the book and go, God, in the book he doesn't have a machine gun. That's weird.
Right.
And Virgil's not a babe. I don't understand this. I have more literature video games.
Absolutely,
yes.
Absolutely.
We have the game War and Peace, but mostly war. One of my favorites, Super Karamazov Brothers.
Oh, that's good. That's very good.
Charles Dickens, A Tale of Sim Cities. Grand Theft Odyssey. Mm. Pride and Extreme Prejudice. Love in the Time of Tetris.
Wow, how long were
it's
you
amazing
with this?
We got anything else
what
done
else
this
did
week?
You do this week?
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always click the Contact Us link at our website, waitwait@npr.org. While there, you can check out our blog, follow our Twitter feed, and find information about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago or on the road, such as our upcoming show in New Orleans, Louisiana, March 11th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Judge Ann Siegel.
I'm sorry, did you say judge?
I did.
Oh, my gosh.
I do.
You judge. You are a judge, and you do judge. Is it fun to be professionally judgmental?
Yeah, it's fun isn't the word. It's always interesting. You know, people, you sometimes you just sit there and you think, what were you thinking? And so, you know, it's very interesting. It's like night court, but it's during the day, and of course, people go to sleep.
And with pets.
It's like
and
night court, pets. But during the day. Well, Judge Ann, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, of course, fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of them. Do that, you'll be a winner. Here's your first limerick.
Please apologize after our fight, dear, and speak up, honey, so that I might hear. I am tilting my head, so I'll catch what you said. To say sorry, just speak in my...
ear.
Yes, but which ear?
Oh, in my... Well, it'd be my right ear or
yes.
my left ear.
Well, right,
my right ear.
Your right ear, yes.
It could be your middle ear.
It could be your middle ear. Your lower ear. Scientists at the University of Valencia in Spain conducted a series of hearing tests on 30 young men. And they found that when they were angry, the men are much more sensitive to sounds heard through their right ear. Strangely. Therefore, they concluded if you want to apologize to someone after a fight, you should always speak in their right ear. This, of course, explains why we've recently seen Rahm Emanuel standing or sitting to Obama's right at all times. All right, here
okay.
is your next limerick.
When Earth's crust this big dino did tread, colored feathers did cover my head. Name callers injure, so don't call me Ginger, though the top of my head is bright.
Red?
Red, yes. Steven Spielberg is going to have to colorize the Jurassic Park movies because for the first time, scientists say they have discovered the color of a particular dinosaur. They're studying pigments found preserved with fossilized remains, and the University of Bristol scientists say that these shows that this particular dinosaur was, quote, covered in, quote, russet and orange feathers. Mm. It was a redhead. Scientists, however, still don't have the technology to say for sure if the carpet matched the drapes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I can't believe the scientists were snowed into thinking that was natural.
Yeah. A little, an ancient Clairol bottle from the Jurassic.
I swear it was like this when I was younger. I just went with it.
Here, for you're doing very well, here is your last limerick.
While Jefferson honed his fine craft, founding fathers stood by and just laughed. Why, surely he jokes when he writes, we the folks. We are glad it's just the first
draft.
Right. Archivists at the Historical Society in Philadelphia have known for a while about a partial early draft of the Constitution, scribbled on the back of another one, in the handwriting of framer James Wilson. Now one researcher has discovered what appears to be the rest of Wilson's version of the Constitution. It immediately became clear why it was Wilson who was not chosen to write the final Aww. Draft. Us people, he wrote, want to make us a nice new country with laws and liberty and stuff, plus lots of guns.
Congress Look. Shall make no law. You know what? Leave it there. They shall make no law. Hell with them. That's amendment number one. No more laws.
Carl, how did Anne do in our quiz?
Well, the judge is the winner, Peter. She had three correct answers.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for playing, Judge.
Thank you very much.
We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for
the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Adam Felber has the lead. Peter, he has 4 points. Julia Sweeney and Mo Rocca are tied for second. Each has two.
Okay. Well, we have flipped a coin, and Mo is elected to go second. So, Julia, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Law enforcement officials said that the man who attempted to blow up a blank on Christmas was helping them track down a radical cleric.
An airplane.
Right. On Thursday afternoon, blank was sworn in as the new senator from Massachusetts.
Scott Brown.
Right. New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo brought civil charges of fraud against Ken Lewis, the former CEO of blank.
Merrill Lynch?
Bank of America.
Bank of America.
The British medical journal The Lancet retracted an article published in 1998 linking vaccines to blank.
Autism.
Right. An Australian man drinking at a hotel bar was arrested after he tried to blank.
Took off his clothes.
After he tried to kiss a police dog. Barbara Streisand, Celine Dion, and Kanye West were among the stars who recorded a new version of the song blank.
Oh, I'm so bad at these. We Are the World.
Yes, to aid Haiti this time.
What?
Yes.
God.
It's true, to aid Haiti. Because there are no groundhogs living there this week, Alaskans celebrated blank.
Groundhog Day.
No, they celebrated Marmot Day.
Marmot Day.
The Portsmouth City Council in Britain has decided to make its taxi driver applications available in blank.
Where is it?
Portsmouth in Britain.
Oh, in Farsi?
No, they've decided to make their taxi driver applications available in Braille.
No, that is a lie. That can't be true.
The Portsmouth City Council prides itself on being culturally inclusive, so why not help the visually impaired become cab drivers? The policy came under some criticism this week, but the council got some unexpected support from the American Union representing baseball umpires. Carl, how did Julia do in our quiz?
Julia had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points and the lead.
Well done. All right. That was a very nice round, Julia. Mo, you're up next. Please fill in the blank. 10 Baptist missionaries who were arrested trying to take children out of blank were charged with kidnapping on Thursday.
Haiti.
Right. Just as Toyota began fixing problems with its gas pedals, the Transportation Department began investigating reports of brake problems with the blank.
Prius.
Right. As part of his new budget plan, President Obama canceled NASA's plan to return to the blank.
Moon.
Right. Fans in New Orleans and Indianapolis converged to Miami for this year's blank.
Oh, the bowl that is super.
It is. According to a study in the British Medical Journal, people suffering from sleep apnea could find relief by blanking.
Staying awake.
No. Learning to play the didgeridoo. This week, residents of Washington, D.C. and Atlanta said goodbye to Taishan and Meilan, 2 blanks who were returned to China.
Pandas.
Right. A principal in Arizona was suspended after sending home a letter asking parents to determine blank.
The names of their children.
No. He asked the parents to figure out whether their child was stupid or just lazy. In this letter, which he wrote as a joke, not meaning it to be sent out, Principal Ron Starr says, quote, "The math we do is really easy. If your child is either too lazy or too stupid to finish it in class, I'm sending it home so you can judge for yourself whether it's laziness or idiocy that inhibits your child's progress," end quote.
That's pretty funny.
School officials are working to judge for themselves whether Principal Starr should be fired or really, really fired.
How many parents checked C?
Yeah. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Well, Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points and the lead.
Well done, Mo.
Hello.
So, Carl, how many does Adam need to win?
4 to tie, 5 to win outright.
Here we go. Not a big deal for you, Adam. Let's see if you can do it. This is for the game. The Obama administration gave up on plans to hold the trial of the September 11th plotters in blank.
New York.
Right. Harry Reid said Thursday that he hoped the Senate would approve the bill designed to create blanks next week.
Jobs.
Right. Saying it would damage U.S.-China relations, China urged President Obama not to meet with the blank.
Dalai Lama.
Right. Beyonce and Taylor Swift were the big winners at this year's blank awards.
Grammys.
Right. According to the FEC, Sarah Palin's Political Action Committee spent more money on blank than on GOP candidates.
Hair.
No. On her own books and bookmarks. Senator Evan Bayh turned down an offer to follow in Scott Brown's footsteps and blank in Cosmopolitan.
Pose nude.
Right. An alleged car thief in Florida was caught after he accidentally tasered himself and then accidentally blanked.
Ran over himself.
Handcuffed himself. Shane Thomas Williams Allen proves the rule. Three
Shane,
names.
Do it yourself, Thomas.
There you go. Three names equals serial killer. Four names means stupid criminal. While robbing an unmarked police car, Mr. Williams Allen accidentally tasered himself, and then after he recovered, he accidentally handcuffed himself. With another option, he called 911 for help and arrest. Carl.
Ta-da!
Did Adam do well enough to win?
He needed five to win outright. He had five correct answers. So with 14
well
points, Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Adam!
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what policy Congress will enact to replace Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing consumer reviews on local professionals, from physicians and veterinarians to plumbers and roofers. Details at angieslist.com. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR in Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Happy birthday to our house manager, Don Hall. Our intern is Christine Fiedler. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchik and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is, the last time I checked, Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will Congress put in place of Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Julia Sweeney.
I think it should be I'm okay, you're okay. Let's go to that.
Mo Rocca.
The policy known as enough with the asking and telling. Now shut up and kiss me.
And Adam Felber.
Do tell.
Well, if Congress enacts any of those policies, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Julia Sweeney, Adam Felber. Thanks to all of you, you fabulous audience here and out in Radio Land, for listening. Listening, I said. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.